was already, to her, a figure of old-world romance. 3. But then, so local legend told, came the sudden darkness that attends the appearance of the wicked fairy. Even as Pagford was rejoicing that Sweetlove House had fallen into such safe hands, Yarville was busily constructing a swathe of council houses to its south. The new streets, Pagford learned with unease, were consuming some of the land that lay between the city and the town. Everybody knew that there had been an increasing demand for cheap housing since the war, but the little town, momentarily distracted by Aubrey Fawley's arrival, began to buzz with mistrust of Yarville's intentions. The natural barriers of river and hill that had once been guarantors of Pagford's sovereignty seemed diminished by the speed with which the red brick houses multiplied. Yarville filled every inch of the land at its disposal and stopped at the northern border of Pagford Parish. The town sighed with a relief that was soon revealed to be premature. The Cantermill estate was immediately judged insufficient to meet the population's needs, and the city cast about for more land to colonize. It was then that Aubrey Fawley, still more myth than man to the people of Pagford, made the decision that triggered a festering 60-year grudge. Having no use for the few scrubby fields that lay beyond the new development, he sold the land to Yarville Council for a good price and used the cash to restore the warped panelling in the hall of Sweetlove House. Pagford's fury was unconfined. The Sweetlove fields had been an important part of its buttress against the encroaching city. Now the ancient border of the parish was to be compromised by an overspill of needy Yarvillians. Rowdy town hall meetings, seething letters to the newspaper and Yarville Council, personal remonstrance with those in charge, nothing succeeded in reversing the tide. The council houses began to advance again, but with one difference. In the brief hiatus following completion of the first estate, the council had realized that it could build more cheaply. The fresh eruption was not of red brick, but of concrete in steel frames. This second estate was known locally as the Fields, after the land on which it had been built, and was marked as distinct from the Cantermill estate by its inferior materials and design. It was in one of the Fields' concrete and steel houses, already cracking and warping by the late 1960s, that Barry Fairbrother was born. 4. In spite of Yarville Council's bland assurances that maintenance of the new estate would be its own responsibility, Pagford, as the furious townsfolk had predicted from the first, was soon landed with new bills. While the provision of most services to the fields and the upkeep of its houses fell to Yarville Council, there remained matters that the city, in its lofty way, delegated to the parish: the maintenance of public footpaths, of lighting and public seating, of bus shelters and common land. Graffiti blossomed on the bridges spanning the Pagford to Yarville Road. Field bus shelters were vandalized. Field's teenagers strewed the play park with beer bottles and threw rocks at the street lamps. A local footpath, much favored by tourists and ramblers, became a popular spot for Field's youths to congregate. And worse, as Howard Mollison's mother put it darkly. It fell to Pagford Parish Council to clean, to repair, and to replace, and the funds dispersed by Yarville were felt from the first to be inadequate for the time and expense required. No part of Pagford's unwanted burden caused more fury or bitterness than the fact that Field's children now fell inside the catchment area of St. Thomas's Church of England Primary School. Young Fielders had the rights to don the coveted blue and white uniform, to play in the yard beside the foundation stone laid by Lady Charlotte Sweetlove, and to deafen the tiny classrooms with their strident Yarville accents. It swiftly became common law in Pagford that houses in the fields had become the prize and goal of every benefit-supported Yarville family with school-aged children, that there was a great ongoing scramble across the boundary line from the Cantermill estate much as Mexicans streamed into Texas. Their beautiful St. Thomas's, a magnet for professional commuters to Yarville who were attracted by the tiny classes, the roll-top desks, the aged stone building, and the lush green playing field, would be overrun and swamped by the offspring of scroungers, addicts, and mothers whose children had all been fathered by different men. This nightmarish scenario had never been fully realized because, while there were undoubtedly advantages to St. Thomas's, there were also drawbacks: the need to buy the uniform, or else to fill in all the forms required to qualify for assistance for the same, the necessity of attaining bus passes, and of getting up earlier to ensure that the children arrived at school on time. Some households in the fields found these onerous obstacles, and their children were absorbed instead by the large, plainclothes primary school that had been built to serve the Cantermill estate. Most of the Fields pupils who came to St. Thomas's blended in well with their peers in Packford. Some, indeed, were admitted to be perfectly nice children. Thus, Barry Fairbrother had moved up through the school, a popular and clever class clown, only occasionally noticing that the smile of a Packford parent stiffened when he mentioned the place where he lived. Nevertheless, St. Thomas's was sometimes forced to take in a Fields pupil of undeniably disruptive nature. Crystal Whedon had been living with her great-grandmother in Hope Street when the time came for her to start school, so that there was really no way of stopping her coming, even though, when she moved back to the Fields with her mother at the age of 8, there were high hopes locally that she would leave St. Thomas's for good. Crystal's slow passage up the school had resembled the passage of a goat through the body of a boa constrictor, being highly visible and uncomfortable for both parties concerned. Not that Crystal was always in class. For much of her career at St. Thomas's, she'd been taught one-on-one by a special teacher. By a malign stroke of fate, Crystal had been in the same class as Howard and Shirley's eldest granddaughter, Lexi. Crystal had once hit Lexi Mollison so hard in the face that she'd knocked out two of her teeth. That they had already been wobbly was not felt by Lexi's parents and grandparents to be much of an extenuation. It was the conviction that whole classes of Crystals would be waiting for their daughters at Winterdown Comprehensive that finally decided Miles and Samantha Mollison on removing both their daughters to St. Anne's, the private girls' school in Yarville, where they had become weekly boarders. The fact that his granddaughters had been driven out of their rightful places by Crystal Whedon swiftly became one of Howard's favourite conversational examples of the estate's nefarious influence on Packford life. 5. The first effusion of Pagford's outrage had annealed into a quieter but no less powerful sense of grievance. The Fields polluted and corrupted a place of peace and beauty, and the smouldering townsfolk remained determined to cut the estate adrift. Yet boundary reviews had come and gone, and reforms in local government had swept the area without effecting any change. The Fields remained part of Pagford. Newcomers to the town learned quickly that abhorrence of the estate was a necessary passport to the goodwill of that hard core of Pagfordians who ran everything. But now, at long last, over 60 years after old Aubrey Fawley had handed Yarville that fatal parcel of land, after decades of patient work, of strategizing and petitioning, of collating information and haranguing subcommittees, the anti-fielders of Pagford found themselves at last on the trembling threshold of victory. The recession was forcing local authorities to streamline, cut, and reorganize. There were those on the higher body of Yarville District Council who foresaw an advantage to their electoral fortunes if the crumbling little estate, likely to fare poorly under the austerity measures imposed by the national government, were to be scooped up and its disgruntled inhabitants joined to their own voters. Pagford had its own representative in Yarville, District Councillor Aubrey Fawley. This was not the man who had enabled the construction of the Fields, but his son, young Aubrey, who had inherited Sweet Love House, and who worked through the week as a merchant banker in London. There was a whiff of penance in Aubrey's involvement in local affairs, a sense that he ought to make right the wrong that his father had so carelessly done to the little town. He and his wife Julia